This is Deborah Beck, professor of ancient Greek literature in the Department of Classics at the University of Texas at Austin. My students and I are excited to welcome you to our podcast, Musings in Greek Literature.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our podcast. My name is Liberty. You guys met me last week on Ava's episode, and now it's my turn to host. And this is episode 7. So, for today's episode, the focus, we're going to be focusing on Medea's anxiety specifically and her back and forth turmoil regarding the decision and the emotions that she is feeling because of this situation. So we're just really going to deep dive into Medea's psyche and her overall anxiety about the decision that she is about to make. So just for some brief context and background information before we get started. So the Argonauts, they just received the challenge to go and get the Golden Fleece. So they are sitting on the boat. Then the omen of the dove and the hawk falls into their laps. So they are inquiring about if Aphrodite is going to help them. And then they eventually decide to hoist it back to the city of Colchis, and wait instructions there and figure it out once they get there. At this time, Medea is going through her decision on whether or not she is going to help Jason or not. It is at this time that she goes to her sister Calliope. In this situation, she is begging, she is crying, she's on her knees trying to get Calliope and her sons to help them in this trial. Eventually, Calliope is won over because of Medea's desperation. So Calliope is won over, and then Medea tries to go back to bed, and this is where we end up. Hi, everyone. Thank you for coming to this week's episode. I am joined with my amazing co-host, Cade.
Hey, Liberty. How's it going?
Going good. Thank you for being here. I appreciate it. Just to get started, we will be reading lines 752 through 770 from book 3 of the Argonautica. And I'm going to go ahead and just read a quick little translation for you from that. For in her love of Aeson's son, many cares kept her wakeful. And she dreaded the mighty strength of the bulls, beneath whose fury he was likely to perish by an unseemly fate in the field of Ares. And fast did her heart throb within her breast, as a sunbeam quivers upon the walls of a house when flung up from the water, which is just poured forth in a cauldron or a pail may be. And here and there on the swift eddy does it dart and dance along. Even so the maiden's heart quivered in her breast, and the tear of pity flowed from her eyes, and ever within anguish tortured her. A smoldering fire through her frame and about her fine nerves and deep down beneath the nape of the neck where the pain enters keenest. Whenever the unwearied Eros direct against the heart of their shafts of agony, and she thought now that she would give him the charms to cast a spell on the bulls, now that she would not, and that she herself would perish, and again that she would not perish and would not give the charms, but just as she would endure her fate in silence. Okay, so now that we have read through that translation, I just kind of wanted to get into the nitty-gritty of the turmoil that Medea goes through, particularly before that and after this section that we just read. So Medea, right before this, is actually pretty dead set on helping Jason. She had just asked Calliope to help her do this scheme to help Jason. And then right after this is our section, and this is where she is like tossing and turning, and she's going through all these back and forth emotions and anxiety of if she should help Jason or not and the consequences of that. And then right after, she invokes the name of Artemis, and in that basically meaning she would rather die than have to choose between her family and Jason. And then right after that, she then decides that she is going to help Jason. So you kind of can see this like linear timeline of Medea's turmoil and her emotions. And I feel like it kind of can be related back to Hans Christian Andersen and his story of the Little Mermaid. She is going back and forth between her family and this guy, and she just wants to have that relationship with the guy, but also keep it with her family. But then she reaps the consequences of going with the guy, feeling like she's walking on glass all the time. And then the possibility of her turning into seafoam and dying at the end. And I feel like that comparison, you can see the complexity of the emotions and the actual turmoil that she's going through that's keeping her up in this passage. Kate, do you have anything specific that you want to mention based off that?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head by saying that this drama and this anxiety springs from being torn between two sides. And what I really enjoy about this passage is that Apollonius kind of develops a poetic image of this back and forth kind of motion in several different areas. First, you have her mental state and her will, her decision making. You know, she decides to help Jason and takes steps to that end, telling Calliope that she'll help. Then as soon as she's alone again, she's back and forth again and doesn't know whether she will or won't. And at one point she makes up her mind and then she thinks she won't. And then, like you said, she contemplates suicide rather than having to face such a choice. And in her physical movement too, you see the same sort of motion, and she's always running back and forth. In the Greek, it's entha kai entha, and we see that over and over again. And she runs to the door and turns back around and then runs back again and throws herself on the bed. And then her heart is also described as fluttering in her breast, going here and there, jumping up to her throat and dropping down to the pit of her stomach. And all those things kind of develop into this same poetic device that gives you this sense of back and forth motion, which is very anxiety inducing as an image, and then also ties into this back and forth in terms of two sides of a decision. And I think, yeah, it relates quite a bit to the Little Mermaid facing the same kind of decision. And it's a very effective image.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, so to further go in depth on Medea's characterization, I just kind of wanted to reread that simile that we heard earlier and just kind of break it down a little bit, just so we can really get into Medea's psyche. So the simile goes, as a sunbeam quivers upon the walls of a house when flung up from the water, which is just poured forth in a cauldron or a pail maybe. And here and there on the swift eddy does it dart and dance along. Even so, the maiden's heart quivered in her breast. So that simile, of course, you can directly compare it to Medea. It's comparing the sunbeam and the quivers to the same quivering of her heart in her breast. So yeah, I just kind of wanted to go a little bit more in depth on Cade, how do you think that this characterizes Medea and like her anxiety, and how does it show us as a reader that she's really struggling?
Well, I think in addition to the sort of irregular motion aspect that we talked about before, where she's kind of unsteady, the use of light as a point of comparison kind of makes her insubstantial. She's not grounded in her bodily form. You know, she's just this dancing ray. And I think the effect of that image is to sort of take her out of her groundedness. And that's what's happening to her in the story. She's being, you know, kind of taken away from the stability of her parents and her home, and forced to consider, you know, upsetting her whole life. And so she's lost that sense of groundedness. And I think the incorporeality of light reflects that uncertain situation that she's facing in her love for Jason.
Yeah, I actually hadn't really thought about it like that. But yeah, the like the separation from like the human form. And I think it also can kind of go back to Ava's discussion on like virtuous, like her, she's also wanting to be virtue. I feel like at least in epics, the characterization of light, not fire, but specifically light, it's more of like this pure form. Like you're just kind of like down to your basic bodily, like not even body, but just like basic formulation. And I think that's really interesting to think about, that it's not only like her pure thoughts, it's also the fact that she's not solid. And you can tell that fluttering, the quivering that she goes through. But like that pure intentions that she's actually struggling with, because she didn't really have a choice in the matter. But you can see how she wants to still hang on to that purity that she has. And I mean, we could also talk about the reflection itself in the water that is reflecting the light. So like the water is going to be ever changing, ever moving. The situation is always going to be changing, always going to be adapting this light in a certain way. And I think that's also interesting to kind of take in because it also dances and darts along. So the whole situation is back and forth, not even just Medea. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the what you see in the interplay between the light and the water is, kind of Medea's choice. You know, her, like you said, light is kind of a refined essence, and it's being refracted through this water, and the sort of trembling play of the light on the wall is coming from the swirling and the movement of the water. And so I think, to me, Apollonius is kind of, he's relying, it's not just tracking at the level of symbolism where we say this corresponds to this and this to this, but it's also, I think, a very it's a very sensual kind of metaphor where we can see what that light looks like, and we can hear the water kind of swirling and swishing. And I think that at that level, it appeals to a more basic sense of what Medea is going through than just the sort of intellectual apprehension of the difficulty of her choice. She's being brought down to a more basic level, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, we could also bring up the fact that the light itself is just distracting and is what's also keeping her awake and causing these thoughts. So a lot of things to touch on with this simile, but I do think it really kind of shows this like complexity that, I mean, Medea in book three has kind of been flushed out. We've kind of been seeing her, but you can just like see the actual pain that she's going through at this point that is keeping her wakeful. She said the pitiful tear falls down her cheek. It's just really powerful to see this such complex simile to show her emotions. So yeah, thank you.
So Liberty, in this section, it really underscores how complex of a character Medea is, and just how much attention and detail is given to her interior state. And that's kind of an interesting opposition to Jason. And so I was wondering what your thoughts were on the comparison in complexity between those two characters, and then also in Medea's sort of struggle and anxiety as compared to some other epic women.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from what we have seen thus far between Jason and Medea, clearly Jason is a lot more simplified in his emotions. We don't really get to see that complexity that Medea has. We don't even get to see it in Euripides' play, Medea. He just kind of is there, and then Medea gets to still feel those emotions. But I think that's an important characterization just in general of women in epic. We were talking about the virtues. That's a big thing. Dido in the Aeneid also went through this struggle of getting hit by the arrow and then having to deal with those consequences. I think that women in epic, not their primary characterization, but a big part of their characterization is this complex emotion that these women are having to go back and forth and dealing with these emotions. I mean, we could contrast Medea with Penelope from the Odyssey. You can see that in the Odyssey, Penelope herself, she doesn't really have to make a decision. She does either marry a suitor or wait for her husband, but she's very dead set in that decision. You can kind of see that she has that family. Like, Odysseus is thus her family at this point. And same with her son, they are her family, but it's still complex in the fact that she's deciding to unweave her little thing every night, she's very smart and thoughtful about it, and still has this anxiety that she's going to have to marry a suitor at one point, or the anxiety that Odysseus is not going to ever come back. On Medea's end, she actually is feeling this pain of the decision. They both feel pain in separate ways, but the pain of the decision in general, either she is going to have to leave her actual family or try and find her own family with Jason. As we find out later in Euripides' play, it's not really goes well for her, but you can see that both are kind of centered around this idea of family and the complexity of family and the complexity of those emotions surrounding family. And I think it's particularly interesting to point out that the characterization of fire specifically in this passage, talking about the smoldering fire in her frame, like fire is brought up. And I think, you know, in ancient Greek mythology, the hearth, the fire is like the center of the home. And I think both Medea and Penelope are like centered around that fire, that hearth. Well, Penelope is the hearth, and then Medea wants the hearth, but she more or less gets this smoldering fire that is kind of uncontrollable. So I think the main characterization of epic women is just to see like the decision-making of the home and complexity of pain and family in that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it seems to be something Apollonius is trying to bring out is that Medea in some ways faces a more difficult choice than Penelope, because it seems pretty straightforward that for Penelope, the right thing to do is to be faithful to Odysseus and wait. Whereas for Medea, she has the loyalty to her family, but her father is not in any sense the good guy. And then she is kind of helplessly in love as well. And that's a more morally ambiguous sort of conflict.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, Apollonius really does a good job at trying to not necessarily like justify, but also just kind of like explaining why Medea does what she does. And I think you kind of lack that in other epics as well. You don't really get a lot of Penelope kind of explaining why she does things. She just kind of does it. But here you can really see that like Apollonius really wants you to understand what Medea is going through, and that she actually doesn't really have a choice in the matter, no matter what. And like, she didn't have a choice to get hit by the arrow. She didn't have the choice to, you know, be put in this situation, but she still has to have that anxiety. And she doesn't get a choice later on in Euripides' Medea, where Jason goes and marries another woman. So she never really gets that choice. And I think Apollonius kind of puts that very plainly and can definitely be contrasted with Penelope. I really want to thank Cade for joining me today as my co-host. Really great co-host.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you. I had a great time.
Couldn't have done it without you. So now that we have done all of that, I'm just going to kind of talk about my experience of being the teacher of the day. You know, in class, when I first heard about this, I had done it before. Of course, I've given presentations before, but it just, you know, kind of freaked me out. Like, media anxiety is a common thing when it comes to public speaking. And I definitely felt that whenever we were beginning this assignment. But there are a few takeaways I could learn from this experience. Mostly, one of the big things I had was just kind of thinking outside the box, trying to find specific moments in the visual aids that would help. I am definitely more of a visual person, more of like an artistic person than like a academic, straightforward, literal person. So I needed that kind of like reference to get me there. And, you know, I learned that we don't always just have to do one particular thing. We can kind of think outside the box and try different things. What was surprising to me is probably the fact that I actually enjoyed it. I didn't think I was. I'm not a very confident person, and that really, it really boosted my confidence when I was able to like get up there and do it. So that was so unexpected. But I really enjoyed, and what I'll probably remember the most is just like the commentary everyone had specifically about the topic. We just spent like minutes talking about specific moments and the simile. And I just, it really felt good to be able to facilitate something like that. So I'm going to remember my classmates' commentary the most. They just really helped and really made the experience worthwhile. So thank you, listeners, for joining us. This was season 3, episode 7 of our podcast on Musings on Greek Literature. I just wanted to thank you for hopping on and listening to us talk about this. My name is Liberty, and next week we'll be listening to our wonderful professor, Dr. Beck, and she will go into detail on her episode. And I just want to thank you guys for joining us. Please comment, review wherever you listen to this podcast. We would really appreciate it. And see you guys next time.